Welcome to the Talk Birdie to Me podcast. This is Bird Dog Banner with Emily, and that's me. This is an informal but educational discussion on dog-related topics. We'll cover everything from waterfowl and upland hunting to training tips and even some controversial topics from a dog trainer's perspective. If you like what you hear, please be sure to subscribe and follow me on social media at Short Hairs and Shotguns and also at Horizon Retrievers. Welcome to episode 16 of the Talk Birdie to Me podcast. In today's episode, I'm going to cover e-collars in depth. What they are, how we use them, why we use them, those kinds of things. There is a ton of information on e-collars in the world, online, in real life. There's a variety of ways to use them. I won't say that some are correct and others are incorrect, but there are definitely things I do with an e-collar and things I don't do with an e-collar for me personally that I want to discuss and kind of clear the air on some things. A lot of people have a very emotional response to discussing e-collars, and I'd like to have a solid resource for my clients in particular about what e-collars are and how we use them and why we don't use them in certain ways and so on. So this all is for me personally and in particular for my clients, but I hope everyone will get something out of this, especially if you're on the fence about using an e-collar or if you just don't have enough experience with an e-collar to form an opinion. And I respect you for that. Most people who don't understand them immediately assume that they are only bad. So here's some in-depth e-collar information that I hope will clear the air and provide some clarity on different topics on the e-collar. So first, what is an e-collar? To me, an e-collar is a training tool that provides the handler the ability to communicate with their dog, and especially with their dog at a distance. So in its simplest form, to me, it's a communication tool. When I'm using an e-collar with the dog, when that dog feels it, I want them to first think, hey, my handler wants something from me. So it is not just a form of punishment to me. It is first and foremost communication. I am telling my dog I want them to change their behavior in some way. And that doesn't always mean stop that. So a lot of times I see people associate the e-collar with only punishing their dog. You're bad. Don't do that. You're wrong. Quit that. But to me, it's a communication tool. It might mean come to me. It might mean go to place. It might mean lay down. But it also could mean don't do that. But more than anything, it's a communication tool. In a more literal sense, what is an e-collar? Modern e-collars are a lot different than what they used to be. And so if you're familiar with the old-time e-collars that used to be absolutely giant that, I think the original Bird Dog people were using, they've come a long way since then. Modern e-collars are very much like a TENS unit, which is a muscle stimulator, muscle contractor that you might use at the chiropractor. And I don't just talk about this in order to sugarcoat it. Because if you haven't felt a modern e-collar, and especially the one I use, which is going to be the e-collar technologies mini educator, the ET300, all e-collars are a little bit different. But if you feel an ET300, it is a very different experience from feeling like a livestock fence. And again, I don't say that to sugarcoat it, but it's important that we understand that when a dog feels an ET300 at a reasonable level, their working level is generally somewhere between a 10 to a 15 out of 100. It's not anything like touching a livestock fence if you've had that experience. If you associate an e-collar with something like touching a livestock fence, I can see how you'd be hesitant to use one. I wouldn't use one as a form of communication if that was exactly how it felt. But it's very different. And if anyone wants to feel one and lives locally, I'd love to have a conversation with you in person about it and let you feel it. But it's a TENS unit. So it picks up the muscle and puts it back down. A lot of people say that feeling it on a working level, so a 10, a 15, some people don't even feel it until a 20. I make sure all my clients feel it before we use it on their dog. It feels like if you put it on your hand, it kind of feels like your fingers are going numb. So it's not an immediate knee-jerk response. It's just a sensation. So that's what an e-collar is. Let's talk about how we use it. So in general, the way we use an e-collar for me is going to be pressure motivates, but the release teaches. And I'm going to repeat that a lot. Pressure motivates, release teaches. When talking about pressure, I'm going to define it as an influence that encourages the dog to change his behavior. So pressure can come in all sorts of different types. The first type would be physical pressure, which can be spatial. So for me, this really comes into play with horses. A lot of times with horses, we use our space to influence them, to get them to move in a certain way, to get them to change where they're going or to get out of the way. So if you've ever walked towards a dog to get them to back up, you know, maybe at a threshold or something like that, that's spatial pressure. So you moving your space into their space in order to get them to change their space, your pressure is motivating, or your space is motivating them. The pressure of your space is motivating them to change their behavior. And when they get out of the way, you release that pressure by not continuing to walk towards them. So if you've got a dog that's in a threshold and you need them to move out of that threshold, you walk towards them, they walk away, you stop walking towards them. Pressure motivates, release teaches, and that's in the terms of spatial pressure. You're not actually touching them, but you're using your space to manipulate theirs. Pressure can also be physical, so a leash or your hands. If you've got a little puppy that you're teaching to sit and you press down on their butt, they sit, you stop pressing down. That is physical pressure. Pressure motivates, release teaches. So the hand on their butt is uncomfortable. They change their behavior. They sit. And once they sit, you remove that pressure. So this is a good example of how the release teaches. So if you put your hand on your puppy's butt to get them to sit, and they sit and you keep your hand on their butt, meaning you keep pushing down, chances are they're going to do something else. They're going to get up, they're going to wiggle around, they're going to move, they're going to try to escape that pressure in a different way, since the sit didn't cause that pressure to go away. So that's why the release is important. If you press down on their butt and they never sit and you stop pressing down on their butt, you'll never get them to sit, because they're not understanding that the sit is what causes the pressure to go away. So that timing of push down on their butt when they're standing, stop pushing down on their butt when they sit, is a great example of pressure motivates, but the release teaches. Pressure can also be physical pressure can also be a leash. So, you know, if your puppy wants to go right and you pull on the leash to get them to go left, that is physical pressure. Pressure can also be environmental. So if you're standing outside and it starts to rain and you move inside because you don't want to get wet, that's environmental pressure. That also is something that's applicable to dogs, and we talk about the environment and manipulating the environment a lot with our bird dogs, and there's absolutely some environmental pressure associated with that. And a fourth kind of pressure is e-collar pressure, which is, you know, feeling the sensation of the e-collar. And again, I want that to tell my dog that I want something from them. I want them to change their behavior. So it's important here that we talk about negative reinforcement real quick. Grayson and I on the Companion Gun Dog podcast have a really great discussion on this in some of the early episodes. And if you think that negative reinforcement is something bad, I would encourage you to go listen to that, because we go into depth on how negative in this sense does not mean bad. It means subtraction. So negative reinforcement, negative means to remove something unpleasant in order to make the behavior happen again in the future, which is reinforcement. So remove something to make it more likely to happen again in the future. A lot of people use the e-collar strictly as positive punishment. And again, positive in this case does not mean good. It means the addition of something. So positive punishment means to add something unpleasant in order to decrease the likelihood of a behavior happening again. A great example of that would be a spray bottle. If you have a dog that barks and you spray them with water and they don't like being sprayed with water, they're going to be less likely to bark. We're adding in the water in order to decrease the likelihood of a behavior happening again. So if you aren't super familiar with those terms, again, I would encourage you to go listen to that episode of the Companion Gun Dog podcast. It's one of the very first episodes, because I think those are fundamental terms in order to really understand dog training. And I think in order to use an e-collar properly, you really need to differentiate between negative reinforcement and positive punishment. So again, negative reinforcement means to remove something in order to make the behavior more likely to happen again. So to remove the pressure on the dog's butt in order to make them sit is negative reinforcement. So we push down on our puppy's butt, we remove that pressure when they sit. It's more likely to happen in the future that if they learn, that they will learn that pressure on their butt turns off when they sit. So that's negative reinforcement, and that's how the e-collar is often used. And sometimes we'll get a combination of those. There's some negative reinforcement while some positive punishment is happening. But when using the e-collar as a communication tool, it's not strictly positive punishment, and that's important. And we'll talk about this more throughout the podcast, but in order for us to use it as a communication tool, it's not strictly positive punishment. And that's important because that means we want to use the e-collar. So when I have someone say, oh, I never have to use it, and they're bragging about not having to use their e-collar, well, that's fine if you're using it as positive punishment. Obviously, that means you're not correcting your dog very often, and that's a good thing. But if we're using it as a communication tool, as negative reinforcement, and you're not using your e-collar, that tells me you're not communicating with your dog. You're not asking them to do things. You're only using it to correct them. And that's not how I want to use the e-collar for my own dogs. And that's not how I want my clients to use the e-collar. So the term pressure is overused in dog training a lot. And I want to take a moment to discuss that. I personally like using the word pressure, and I'm going to continue to do so, but I want to clear the air on what that means to me. To me, it means some pressure not only in the physical aspect, but also kind of a mental component as well. So you'll hear Grayson talk about pain a lot and how he likes to be honest and straightforward that a lot of times in dog training, we do use pain to manipulate their behavior. But for me, I want to say the e-collar is a form of pressure and not just pain, because I think there is a mental component where pain doesn't come into play. And what I mean by that is sometimes we're using the e-collar and it's not causing pain, but it can be annoying to the dog to a point where it causes discomfort and encourages them to change their behavior. So let's say it's raining outside and you step under a roof in order to get out of the rain. And that's because the rain was uncomfortable, but not exactly painful. You know, obviously if it was cold and then you're wet, that could be painful. If it was hailing, that would be painful. But in general, let's say it's a mild summer afternoon and it's raining and you step under a roof to get out of that rain. It's not because that rain was going to be painful, but because it was just going to be uncomfortable, annoying. You don't want to be soggy all day. You don't want your socks to be wet. You don't want to ride in the car on the way home in your wet clothes, those kinds of things. So physically, you would have been fine, but mentally, you don't want to be wet because of all those reasons. And so that's how I view a lot of the experiences with the e-collar. Our dogs aren't just changing their behavior because they're scared of the pain. That can be a component of it, but it has the potential to be painful, but most of the times it's a general discomfort that the dog could tolerate, but is opting to respond to instead. So I view the e-collar as pressure because sure, there could be the association of pain, and there will be at some point in certain circumstances. But in general, when we're using the e-collar appropriately at the dog's working level and we've taught them how to respond appropriately to it, they're not responding just because it hurts. And if you feel an e-collar on a 10 or a 15 out of 100, you're going to see it's not painful, but it is uncomfortable. It can be annoying. It is, again, a lot like your finger going numb. So, or your hands going numb, your fingers tingling. That's just something you don't want to deal with. Very much like the rein. It's not painful, but also it's not optimal. So you want to turn that rein off. You want to step under the roof. You want to turn the e-collar off. So what does that look like? What is a practical application of the e-collar? So for me, I'm going to say the command and turn the e-collar on. And this is a command that the dog already knows, that I've been paired with the e-collar. I've prepped the dog. So this is, once the dog understands what I want and is familiar with the e-collar, I say the command, the e-collar turns on, the dog does the correct behavior, does what I'm looking for, and the e-collar turns off. Pressure motivates, release teaches. So if we were looking for a recall, we want the dog to come back to us, I'd say my here or come, whatever my word is, turn the e-collar on. Once a dog makes forward momentum in my direction, meaning they are obviously recalling, I turn the pressure off. I release that e-collar button. So say the command, turn it on, they follow through, release, turn it off. Pressure motivates, release teaches. There's a couple of things that are important here. We have to introduce it properly. This is huge. I never ever recommend people introduce the e-collar without a professional's help, because you can do a lot to mess it up very quickly, or you can make it very easy on yourself and introduce it in a way that the dog understands, to where from the get-go they know what to do. So it's very easy to introduce improperly, and it's also very easy to introduce correctly. The difference is it's very hard to recondition. So once you teach your dog the e-collar means run away, it can be very hard to recondition them that the e-collar means come to you. So whenever we release that button is when the dog learns that they're doing the right thing. And it's important that we establish from the very beginning what that right thing is. So we can't just say, okay, my dog knows recall, come, without an e-collar. Now I'm just going to slap the e-collar on, say come, use it, and they're going to come right to me and everything will be fine and dandy. That's not exactly how it works. And if you're interested in how to teach your dog to respond appropriately to the e-collar, I've got tons and tons of videos on my Patreon about that under the DIY membership subscription level. I'm not going to go into depth of that here because I think it's really important that people see it in depth, which is why I've got so many videos on my Patreon about it. But moral of the story is, you don't just throw an e-collar on the dog, press a button, and think that it's going to work. That's not how dog training works. You have to, in a very specific manner, show them exactly what you want and make sure you're setting them up for success to do the right thing. I see a lot of people unintentionally teach their dog to bolt because they put an e-collar on. They turn it on, it spooks the dog, they take off, and they stop using the e-collar. So the release teaches, regardless of the circumstances, meaning if your dog takes off running, hightails it, and you stop using the e-collar, you've taught them when they feel that sensation, they can run away from it and it turns off, which is the opposite of what we want to happen. So it's very important that we introduce it correctly in a way the dog understands what we're looking for, and their only option is to do the right thing. That way they learn from the very beginning what turns that pressure off. That's so, so important. And again, I don't recommend anyone try e-collar conditioning their dog without a professional's help, because it's so easy to do wrong and really, really set yourself up for failure. And it's also really easy to do right and just from the beginning have a really great positive experience with it. And in that case, positive does mean good. So again, back to how we use it. We say the command, turns on. They do the right thing, turns off. The difference, the variation in that is going to be how the dog responds or lack of response. So the beauty of the e-collar and why I choose to use them is because we have the ability to match the level of distraction. So imagine learning to drive, your first time in a car, your first time in the driver's seat, is in an empty parking lot, nothing around, not even a light pole to hit, no cars to hit, nothing going on, sunny Saturday afternoon, you've got all the time in the world, it's easy. But let's say you're learning to drive during a thunderstorm on a freeway on a busy Friday while an accident's happening in front of you. That would be the hardest time to learn to drive. Your anxiety would be so high. It would be so stressful versus that easy Saturday afternoon in the parking lot. So our distraction level really influences how we respond to the environment around us. So learning in that stressful situation is much more difficult than learning in the peaceful situation. It's much easier to respond to things when nothing's going on, so we can really take our time and think through, okay, now I'm pressing on the gas with my right foot, now I'm taking my right foot off the gas and pressing on the brake, versus being in a situation where you've got to have a knee-jerk response and hurry up and get through things. So that distraction level really influences our behavior and how we think and how we respond, which is where the e-collar comes in. So when nothing's going on and you're at home, a lot of people have a lot of success getting their dog to sit at mealtime when they're focused, when they're ready to eat, when they're food motivated. Sit is easy then. But then we take them to a park where there's people and dogs and bikes and cars and squirrels, and they've already had breakfast, they're not hungry, we try to ask them to sit for food, and they go, what do you mean sit? They don't even hear you. That's where the e-collar comes into play, because we have the ability to match that level of distraction. So if we think of the e-collar, a lot of them have a variety of levels. So if you aren't familiar, again, the ET300 goes from 0 to 100. Some like sport dog modes go from 1 to 8. That's why I use the ET300, because we've got all these different levels to choose from. If we think of that as volume, how dogs perceive the e-collar pressure is how we perceive volume. If I'm sitting here talking to you and nothing's going on, this is my normal voice. But if we went to a concert, I'd have to speak a whole lot louder for you to hear me over that level of music. So not yelling at you because I'm mad at you, but because if I didn't raise my voice, you wouldn't hear me. So that same thing happens to dogs, whether you want to talk about it as a level of music or as a distraction level where you're driving in a thunderstorm and an accident's happening. We've got to match that level of distraction with dogs. So going up on the e-collar allows us to match that level of distraction when otherwise we might not be able to. So if we're at the park and we don't have an e-collar and our dog isn't interested in our food, how are we going to get their attention? So at the concert, that would be raising our voice for them to hear us over the level of music. Or at the park with the dog that's been properly e-collar conditioned, we can go up on the e-collar to match that level of distraction. So if our dog doesn't want food, we can be SOL in a lot of situations if we need to get their attention, and we can't outcompete the environment. So if you've got a dog that's really interested in other dogs and not very interested in food, it's hard to compete with that.
The e-collar offers a variety of levels, especially the one I use, that can compete with that by interrupting it, by getting their attention, because it can match that level of distraction. So back to our recall, when you're in the backyard and nothing's happening and your dog is slightly focused on you because it might be dinner time and you recall them, they might be highly likely to come back to you. And in that case, we might be using vibrate or working level stim, which I'll talk about in a second. But if you're at the park and they're actively chasing a squirrel and they're about to grab that squirrel and you go, "Hey Blitz, do you mind coming back?" She's literally not going to hear that. And she could give no care in the world about coming back to me if there's a squirrel right in front of her face. So that e-collar allows me to match that level of distraction of the squirrel and get her to come back. So there's a big difference between recalling in the backyard, no squirrels around, dinner time, she's hungry, those kinds of things, versus at the park when she's off leash, there's a lot going on and she's about to catch a squirrel. Big difference in asking our dogs to come back in those cases. And so the e-collar allows us to match that level of distraction with the squirrel to go up until they can feel it even over the distraction level. So in general, we're going to be on a working level with our dog because they don't live in a constant state of about to catch a squirrel. Blitz is obviously in that state more than other dogs, but she doesn't live in that state. There are more often than not, she's paying attention and I can get her back with minimal effort. So that's what we call working level. To me, I want to use the e-collar at the lowest level my dog will feel and respond to, no matter what's going on. So in general, that's around a 10, again, out of 100. That's where most dogs, in my experience, feel the ET 300. Most dogs don't feel it lower than that, so there's no point in keeping it lower than that. That would be like me whispering to you on a daily basis. That would be weird, unless there's a circumstance where you could hear me really well, overly well. It would be weird for me to talk to you in a whisper. So I just use my normal volume, which is this volume right here, which is somewhere around a 10 for Blitz. And so the majority of the time, that's where she's going to be on the e-collar. And a lot of times I use vibrate too, which a lot of people use tone. I particularly do not ever use tone because A, I hate noises, and that would be so irritating to me. And B, I don't want my dog to respond to noises in that way for a variety of things. I don't want them to be on alert for noises. This is just me personally, but I don't want them to be responsive to noises like that. So I use vibrate as a suggestion. So generally vibrate is just one level on the e-collar. There's no low vibrate and high vibrate. It's just vibrate. And to me, that's, "Hey Blitz, do you mind coming back?" That's a suggestion. It's a tap on the shoulder. And if I tap you on your shoulder and you turn around and say, "Hey, what do you want?" That's when the e-collar turns off. So e-collar comes on. "Hey Blitz, I want something from you." She knows that in that case, it's recall. She starts to head back towards me. I release that vibrate. So that changes depending on the level of distraction. So again, if I go, "Hey Blitz, do you mind coming back?" and she's about to grab a squirrel, she absolutely minds and she's absolutely not coming back to me. So if I need her to come back in that sense, I'm going to use a higher level on the e-collar that matches that level of distraction. So that might be a 30, it might be a 70. I don't know until I'm in that situation with my dog. So again, I'm always wanting to use the lowest level they'll feel and respond to, but I have to match that level of distraction. So a couple things here. For one, if you're going to use an e-collar, in my opinion, you've got to be flexible. You can't just put it on a 2. You know, if your e-collar goes from 1 to 8, you can't just put it on a 2 and leave it there indefinitely. Because I can guarantee you, without a doubt, 100%, at some point, that 2 is going to be higher than what the dog needs, and at some point, it's going to be lower than what the dog needs. So that is not how we use an e-collar. You've got to be flexible and go up and down as necessary, and that might be from 1 second to the next. I recall her away from that squirrel, we move on, and now she's back to her working level because the squirrel's no longer part of the picture. So it's important to note here that the level of the e-collar does not matter to me. So I don't care if you're on a 2 or a 70. What I care is how you're responding, meaning you're responding appropriately. I never, ever want to be the boy who cried wolf and go here, 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 and not have it have any value to my dog, for there not to be any consequence. That's how we teach our dog to ignore us. So I'm sure you've seen the people that go here, 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 Blitz, come on, Blitz, come, here, come. Which is not only annoying, I hate to hear that and see that, and I certainly won't be one to do that, but it also teaches our dog to ignore us, and it can be a safety concern. Because, you know, it's one thing for them to be in the backyard and not listen when we come, but if we're going to have them off leash, if there's another dog coming, a car coming, something dangerous happening, we need them to come back to us. And so by varying our level on the remote is going to keep them snappy and responsive and not immune to it. So when people only use one level, you know, they use vibrate and they never go up from there, that teaches our dog over time, if they don't respond, there's no consequence. And therefore, they don't have to respond, and we inoculate them to that pressure, meaning we use it and they go, oh, this is just, you know, one more thing in the environment that I ignore. Just like it can be something where we say here, 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 and they don't respond to us. The same thing can happen with the e-collar. So it's important that we match the level of distraction. That's an absolute must. If your dog's not responding and they know what they should be doing, you know, they understand how to turn that pressure off. You can't just start off high and expect them to know what to do. Again, e-collar conditioning is super important. But if we don't go up to match that level of distraction, we do become the boy who cried wolf, and that e-collar loses value. So when I see people that are scared to go up on the remote, it's actually doing more harm than good, because you're teaching your dog to ignore that lower level, and over time you'll have to use higher and higher and higher levels in order to get them to respond. Versus if your dog ignores you, quickly going up until you match that level of distraction and they feel motivated to respond, that will keep them snappy and keep them responsive at the lowest levels. So for me, I use the e-collar anytime I'm giving my dogs commands, especially in the beginning. Over time, I might fade that out, but what's important here is that the e-collar is a communication tool, and so it should be used when we're communicating with our dog, especially while they're learning, and especially for me, while my clients are learning. The best way to get good at the e-collar is to use it. So when I send dogs home from a board and train program, I want the client using the e-collar with every command, because that will keep their dog responsive, it will keep their dog in tune, and it will teach them how to use the e-collar, teach them how to be good at it. So using it with all commands is very black and white, meaning I say something, you're motivated to respond, you do it, it turns off regardless of what it is. And so again, we can only use the e-collar with things we've taught. So you use it when a dog comes home from a board and train program with me, you can use it with here, sit, down, place, heel. But you can't tell your dog something like roll over and use the e-collar and expect them to just know how to roll over. That's not the way it works. But I want clients using the e-collar with every command that we've paired it with, so that the dog stays responsive, you don't have to nag them, and so you get good at it. The only time the e-collar gets weird is when we make it weird. It's the humans that are responsible for dogs being weird about the e-collar. It's not the dog. So I don't ever want to hear someone telling me, well, I have a British Lab, I can't use the e-collar. Well, I have a French Brittany, they're sensitive, I can't use the e-collar. That is the human's emotions playing into that, to where the dog finds it to be an emotional situation. If you're not weird about it, your dog's not going to be weird about it. It's as simple as that. And if you're using it properly, yeah, certainly I'm sure you can use it incorrectly and make a dog weird about it. And that's why I say it's absolutely imperative to work with someone in order to introduce it correctly. And as long as you introduce it correctly and you're not weird about it, your dog's not going to be weird about it. There are ways we can make our dog weird about it, which are tiptoeing around the e-collar. To me, if you're going to tiptoe around it and be uncomfortable using it, you just shouldn't use it. It's as simple as that. If you can be confident and not feel guilty about using it, because again, it's not punishment, it's communication in this sense. If you're going to feel guilty about recalling your dog with vibrate or working level stim, you're going to make your dog feel weird about it. Especially if you're tiptoeing around and only using it in certain circumstances. So I see people use it sporadically when they're uncomfortable with it. So they want to not use it, but they know sometimes they need to. That sporadic use will make your dog feel weird about it, because then it's not a part of their life. It's not something they're used to and accustomed to. It's something that happens randomly, and now they're on edge because they never know when it's going to happen. If you're weird about it, your dog's going to be weird about it. So if you use it correctly and fairly and in an appropriate manner and consistently, it becomes a part of your dog's life and a part of your life, and it's normal and all is well. But if you tiptoe around or use it sporadically or don't use it correctly, you can definitely cause your dog to be skeptical of it, because it's not predictable. It's not black and white. And that's why I don't exclusively use vibrate or tone. This is another one of my pet peeves, is when I hear people say, oh, I've only ever had to use tone. If your dog's that responsive to tone, it probably means they're a little bit worried about it. And that's causing some anxious response to where they come back to you, not so much to where they actually understand how to turn on and off, what turns on pressure and what turns it off. And that worries me, because if at some point they ignore tone and you haven't properly conditioned them how to respond to stimulation on the e-collar, if you get to an instance where they ignore tone and you stim and they're paranoid enough about tone to come back to you, when you use stim for the first time and they don't understand how to respond to it, you could really freak them out. And that's where you get dogs that bolt when they feel the e-collar take off. And then what are you going to do? Especially if they're off leash somewhere. So again, red flags for me when it comes to e-collar use are people who go, I only use tone or vibrate, and they respond every time. To me, that's a dog that's likely not been properly conditioned to it and likely to have a very bad experience if something happens and you have to use stim. People who tiptoe around using it, well, I only use it if my dog's not listening. Well, then that turns into positive punishment, meaning we ask our dog to recall here, 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 they don't, and then we use the e-collar. That's punishing them for not responding to our command versus communicating with them that we want them to change their behavior. And if we're using it like that, that's where you get my biggest e-collar red flag, is when people go, well, I just have to show them the remote and they respond. That is a threat. And that is not something I'm interested in, and that's not something I ever want my clients to be interested in. I don't want you to threaten your dog in order for them to respond. I want them to understand what you're asking for and do it out of cooperation, right? We're communicating with our dog. Do you mind doing this? Sure, I'll do that with you. Not, I'm going to ask you something until you don't do it, and then I'm going to punish you, so you better hurry up and respond or else you're going to feel this e-collar. That is not at all my intention, not at all how I want to communicate with my dog, and not at all how I want to live. I don't want to live with someone who only threatens me if I don't do the right thing. I want to live with someone who I can communicate with, who I can have conversations with, and how we have a mutual understanding of the expectations of living with each other. So I don't want to use it just as positive punishment. I want to use it as communication. So to kind of recap all of that, we use it as a communication tool where when the dog feels it, they understand that we want something from them. They know how to respond properly. They know how to turn that pressure off. They're confident and comfortable with it, just like we are. We can match a level of distraction because the dog understands how to turn that pressure off when they feel it. How we're not using it is only as punishment. We can use it for punishing unwanted behavior, but that's not the only thing we use it for, especially when we're looking for commands. So it's one thing to say, no, don't dig in the backyard. And it's another thing to say, you didn't recall, now you're bad and I'm punishing you for that. Those are two different, totally different types of ways to use it. And we certainly don't want to tiptoe around it or be uncomfortable using it, because that will absolutely transfer to the dog. Meaning, if we feel hesitant about it and only use it sporadically, we can make them skeptical and feel hesitant about it and make them nervous about not knowing, not being able to predict when it's going to turn on, when it's going to turn off, those kinds of things. If you're having an e-collar and feeling weird about using it, to me is a lot like Fred Flintstone. If you're going to have a car that works, why would you dig a hole out of the floorboard and paddle or, you know, run with your feet in order to propel that car when you have a perfectly good car capable of working? So if you're going to use it, use it. And if you want to walk, just walk. There's nothing wrong with that. I have absolutely nothing against people who don't want to use an e-collar, especially people who don't want to use an e-collar because of things like they don't trust themselves with it. I've heard a dog trainer say that. You know, when I get emotional, I don't trust myself to use it justifiably, so I'm not going to use one. I have 110% respect for that. I also have people, you know, that say, well, I'm not confident in how to use it. I have so much respect for people who don't use it because they don't know how to use it properly. What I don't ever want to see or hear about, and I really honestly just have no tolerance for, is people who say, well, I'm not going to use it because they're mean, which, if you know me or my dogs, they live absolutely phenomenal lives, and I use e-collars on every dog I've ever had, and I don't feel an ounce of regret about it or mean about it because it allows them to live such a great life. And so if you're implying that I'm mean because I use an e-collar, I don't want anything to do with you or that situation. If you're going to be open-minded about it and want to learn more about it, that's exactly why I'm here on this podcast, because I'd love to teach you about it. But I have no tolerance for people who imply that I'm mean because I use an e-collar with my dog. To each their own, but I can tell you right now that the connotation of, you know, how we perceive people who use e-collars as being bad is repulsive, and I think that's something that we really as a society can work on changing on. And I hope that podcasts like this, or, you know, information out there on how we can use it in a fair, justifiable way, that it's not just punishment, help with that. And so I guess that leads me into talking about why we use it. And again, for one, because it allows us to match the level of distraction. So we go back to that concert or learning to drive. If your dog doesn't want food and you can't get their attention with toys, the e-collar will match the level of distraction, allows you to communicate with your dog no matter what's going on around you. So there's a lot of beauty in that, which leads to the second reason why we use it, which is safety for ourselves and for others and for our dogs. If you have a dog that has a really solid recall in the backyard and you want to be able to take them off leash at, you know, places where you're allowed to do that, but you know for a fact they're not going to respond to that recall if a squirrel's around, that's a safety risk for people, other people in the park, because, you know, what if your dog chases a squirrel, you can't get them back, and then they run up to a dog, aggressive dog on a leash. So, you know, it's our responsibility. If we're going to have our dog off leash, they have to recall 100% of the time, no matter what's going on around them. And the e-collar provides us with that. It's a safety net. So I'm fairly confident that I can get Blitz back off leash in a variety of circumstances. But there's always that one time where if she sees a critter and is about to grab it, I'm certainly not getting her back. So, you know, if she's going to be off leash in public, especially, she's got to have an e-collar on. That's a hard and fast rule for me, because that's safety for her, safety for other people, safety, you know, in general, it's a safety net. And that's, you know, That applies for even dogs to me that you don't want to have off leash or have no intention. So if you have a pet that lives in your house, how many times have I heard, well, the neighbor came over and it slipped out the front door and we couldn't get him back. Then we had to chase him around the neighborhood for 2 hours. Even if you have no intentions on having your dog off leash, having that e-collar is your safety net and your way of keeping them safe around traffic. And even if it's not your plans to have them off leash, there will be times when things happen, and having that off leash reliable recall can certainly save their life, save you 2 hours from running around the neighborhood being worried sick that they're going to hit by a car and so on. But it also offers a whole lot of freedom and privilege, because then they can do those things. I've had so many people, you know, the biggest compliment I receive is my dog gets to do so much more now. And I love that, because I'm the type of person that I want to take my dog everywhere and do everything with them. And, you know, for one, having a dog that can do those things, meaning I can take it somewhere and allow it to be off leash and know that it's going to respond, is important to me. And for two, it's important for me to set a good example of how dogs should behave in public. I never want to be somewhere and, have my dogs be barking or restless or be a distraction or a nuisance in public, because, you know, I think it's a privilege to have our dogs around other people, and not everyone loves dogs. And to have dogs in those environments be well behaved sets a good example for how dogs should be in those environments, which is respectful for everyone. So it offers a lot of freedom and privilege in those regards. And at home as well. So let's say we have a dog that is really disruptive during mealtime. They countersurf, they beg, you know, they're under your feet, they're in the way. And so at mealtime, you have to crate them so that, you know, they're not countersurfing, they're not under your feet, those kinds of things. Well, if we have an e-collar and we can e-collar condition them to place in a way that they understand, then they can be on place during mealtimes, and we have a way of managing them in that environment so that they can be successful. And so that, again, offers them more privilege of being out during mealtime and being able to hang out with the family versus having to be crated. And that leads me to our third reason of why we use it, which is improved communication. So again, we have the ability to communicate with our dogs at a distance and have even more appropriate timing. So for one, what that looks like is your dog doesn't have to be right beside you in order to hear you and focus on you. Like, you know, if Blitz is off in the woods somewhere and I vibrate her, she knows, hey, mom wants something for me, I need to go find her. Versus me having to scream for her, hope that she hears me, or not allowing her to be off leash to where I can't see her. So improved communication in that regard, but also as far as our timing. You know, if we're teaching place work without an e-collar, meaning we want our dog to go and stay on their bed, if they get up, there's very few things we can provide as a consequence. We just have to consistently reward them for doing the right thing. Whereas the e-collar, we can play the game, the ground is lava, use the e-collar until they're back on place. And it's very clear, it's very black and white, our communication is excellent. Of there's a consequence when your feet are on the ground and there's no consequence when your feet are not on the ground. So I love being able to use the e-collar to make things very black and white for my dogs and show them what I want from them and what I expect from them, versus having some gray area of, well, sometimes I get rewarded here, sometimes I don't, sometimes I get up and nothing happens, and, you know, worst case scenario, sometimes I get my butt whooped for things that I don't know exactly what I'm doing. So I see that a lot with countersurfing. A dog countersurfs, you yell no, they don't respond, but they know they shouldn't be doing it. So you get over to them. By the time you get there, they're no longer countersurfing. You whack their butt, and now what are they being punished for? And now you're making them avoidant and a little bit nervous about the situation, versus when my paws are up on the counter, I feel the e-collar. When my paws are not on the counter, I don't feel the e-collar. I shouldn't put my paws on the counter. Very black and white. Whether we're trying to communicate what we do want them to do or what we don't want them to do. And finally, I love to use the e-collar because it keeps me from having to nag a dog. I just can't do it. Whether it's people or dogs, I'm not going to nag you about something. I'm going to ask you to do it. And if you don't follow through, well, then there's either going to be a consequence for me or a consequence for you. I'm not going to just keep going here, 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 here. I don't have time for that. And it gets under my skin to have to nag a dog or a person. So by using the e-collar, it allows us to not have to nag because we can match the level of distraction and go up with our level of communication to where the dog's more motivated to respond. So again, that's why I don't just sit on vibrate forever. At some point, and generally very quickly, I switch from vibrate to stim, and that stim level increases so that you're motivated to respond without me having to ask you 10 times. And the thing I really love about that is I don't have to raise my voice. So if we're not using an e-collar, you got to go, come, 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 raise your voice in order for the dog to maybe hear you. Or now at this point, you're yelling because you're mad and you need your dog to know that you mean business. I hate raising my voice for any reason. So by using that e-collar, I can keep my voice at a level where my dog can hear me, but I'm not necessarily screaming, and I can let the e-collar go up and essentially raise my voice for me. That way I never have to yell at my dogs. I can just communicate with them via the e-collar that, hey, now I'm raising the consequence. Now I really need you to be more motivated to respond. And that will also interrupt things too. So if you have ever worked with a Boykin who is particularly interested in smells, it can be very hard to interrupt them. And, you know, this goes for a lot of dogs, but it's just generally particular to Boykins who always have their nose on the ground. Same with, you know, some hounds and such. When you yell at them, it's like it just goes in one ear and out the other. And you can really end up yelling a lot and loud and still no response. So by using an e-collar, we can interrupt that quicker and not ever have to raise our voice or nag them. So that's one of the real benefits of using an e-collar to me is being able to communicate clearly and not having to yell or nag. Moving on to who needs an e-collar. So this is going to vary from any person, but I'd say that any dog that's 6 months old and older who understands the expectations and can be held accountable for their behavior could use an e-collar. Anyone who wants to keep their dog safe, anyone who wants to communicate well with their dog, anyone who wants to especially have their dog off leash can use an e-collar. Who doesn't need an e-collar is going to be someone who's not going to use it properly. I'd rather you not use an e-collar than use it incorrectly. So that might be poor timing. That might be just using it as punishment. That might mean being scared to use it, so you use it ineffectively because it's sporadic and not consistent. And anyone who's not going to introduce it, you know, with a professional. So if you're just going to wing it and try to, I see a lot is people have a dog that runs away. And so they put the e-collar on their dog, and when they start to run away, they just absolutely fry them. I don't ever, ever, ever recommend introducing an e-collar like that, and I'd rather you not use an e-collar and keep your dog on leash than introduce it like that. But I don't think that my moral of the story here is I don't think there's any dog that you go, well, again, this dog's British, I shouldn't use an e-collar. This dog is a French Brittany, they're sensitive, I can't use an e-collar. That's just silly to me. Again, it's not the dog that makes them weird, it's the people that make them weird. And finally, I just want to wrap this up by, you know, talking about the emotional response to e-collars, and I touched on this a little bit earlier, but I really want to make a big deal of this. The idea that people should be looked down upon or judged for their use of an e-collar, it just eats me up when people go, well, I can't show my neighbors that I'm using an e-collar. And I just hate that for them so much because people are so mean and judgmental for absolutely no reason. And I just simply can't relate because, you know, when I think about my first experience with an e-collar, my friend Sarah got a Doberman Sawyer, and worked with a company to e-collar condition him. And I very specifically remember the first night I went over to her house when he got home from his board and train and she had her e-collar on. She made us white chicken chili and we all had dinner and he was so well behaved. He laid down the whole time. You know, he wasn't, again, under the table begging, nothing. He was very obedient and I was just so impressed. And there just wasn't a single instance where I was like, man, Sarah really hates her dog, or Sarah's a terrible person, or Sarah's so mean for doing this to her dog. I thought, wow, here's a dog that's really well behaved, who now gets to be out during dinner time while guests are over, who has so much more freedom. I mean, it was obvious to me from the very first time I really saw someone use an e-collar like this that she did something really cool for her dog and for herself that's going to last, you know, his whole life. And so it's silly to me that we're so judgmental about them, and especially with the connotation that the people using them are mean, when I feel like the exact opposite is true. Like, the people that are investing the money and e-collar conditioning their dogs, with especially with trainers and going that route, are the people who are the most dedicated to their dogs, who want the best for their dogs, who are making the most effort to provide their dogs with a good life. And so I'd really love to see that idea be changed, that when we see someone go through e-collar training, I'd love for everyone to look at them and go, wow, that person loves their dog. They want to keep their dog safe. They want to do stuff with their dog. They want their dog to have the best life possible. And, you know, the majority of people I talk to who don't know anything about e-collars hear about people's bad experiences a lot, and that gives them this bad reputation. And there are plenty of people out there using e-collars inappropriately and incorrectly. And I said I wouldn't say that, you know, that's incorrectly, but people out there using e-collars in a way that I wouldn't ever use them, and I don't recommend people use them. And that's kind of what gives them the bad reputation. But I think there's enough good trainers out there now that we should hopefully have some really good examples of how e-collars can be used. And I encourage, again, anyone that you're here listening to this, if you've made it this far, you're obviously invested in it. But I just wish that people who hated on e-collars were more prone to seek factual information about them, to learn more about them, than to just write them off to where, you know, people who use e-collars are bad because this one time I saw a dog scream when someone didn't know how to use it. So that's, you know, a big part of why I'm doing this podcast, is just because I feel like they're such a valuable tool, and I really hurts me when people are judgmental, especially to my clients, about their decision when I feel like they're doing the absolute best thing for their dog by providing them with a fun, safe life by using e-collars. And to kind of wrap up, there are brands I would recommend, brands I don't. Please don't go get the cheapest e-collar off Amazon and use that, because a lot of times those don't work well. They're not consistent. Again, I think it's so important to have a variety of levels. I love the ET300 because it goes from 0 to 100, which means at any moment my dog might be on a 10, they might be on a 12, they might be on a 15. I can always use the lowest level they'll feel and respond to, versus a e-collar with 8 levels where, again, at one point they're ignoring a 2 because they don't feel it, and the next minute they're screaming on a 2 because it's too much. We've got to be able to match that level of distraction, and having a variety of levels allows us to always use the lowest level they'll feel and respond to. So using a reputable brand is certainly important. And if you're a future client of mine, I'd be happy to help you out getting a ET300, which is what I recommend. If you have a lot of people use Garmin and stuff, which is a reputable brand. So as long as there's enough levels for your dog to comfortably respond to, and it's a reputable brand, meaning it's not going to sometimes work and sometimes not work, that's really important. Use whatever e-collar you'd like. And if you want more information on e-collars, remember that I've got a ton of videos on my Patreon under the DIY membership of using e-collars. I also offer virtual lessons and sessions if you want to e-collar condition your dog yourself, but you're not local. I'd be happy to help Or you can always sign up for a board and train program. I have a 3-week obedience program where I go over e-collar intro, which involves off-leash reliable recall, place, go to your bed and stay there, sit down, stay, heel, work around distractions, naughty behavior, those kinds of things. So I'd love to work with you and your dog. If you're listening to this, I appreciate you supporting this podcast, and I hope you learned something. And I hope, you know, if you have anyone in your life that is judging you or being nasty about e-collar use, that you, for one, ignore them because they don't know what they're talking about, and for two, maybe send them this podcast and introduce them to a way of using an e-collar where it's not just punishment and you're not just a terrible person. So feel free to reach out if you need any support on that subject. But I hope you guys enjoyed this, and thanks for listening.